Sure.
Thank you.
Can you hear me? Jumbo. Habriyako. No, the energy. We're still early in the day. I need more energy in the room. Habriyako. Where is Muzuri Sana? Actually, I have a surprise for the panelists. We'll do this panel in Swahili. How would we do this? So I actually have the pleasure to be here in a very exciting conversation around digital transformation and with a very prestigious panelist. I'm actually really looking forward to the conversation. So I would like to call on stage Gerald. Please join me. Please, round of applause for Gerald, partner KPMG, and I'll give you the floor to introduce myself. Thank you. Tony, I think by now everybody got to know Tony.
Asante. Asante.
Thank you. I'm hoping the rest of the panelists are here. I see Ranga in the back as well. Please join me. Ranga, Microsoft, our corporate vice president at Microsoft. Ranga, thank you for joining us. Please. Let me. And I think Patrick should be. Patrick, okay. Thanks. Please. Jeremiah, please. Microsoft. So thank you for joining me. It's actually humbling to be with such a prestigious panel coming with diverse experience and talking about very interesting topic around digital transformation. Digital transformation is a big conversation across the industry and obviously for us and Microsoft in particular. But one that's personally for me is so interesting in the context of Africa and sub-Saharan Africa. What does it really mean? And how do we call out the different pillars of a business being truly digitally transformed? And in a way, what are we trying to achieve by that? These are some of the questions that I personally, working across the region, and I actually haven't properly introduced myself. So I'm Amr Kamel. It's a very hard name, short name, three letters, but it's very hard to pronounce. And I'm responsible for the region. I work for Microsoft, responsible for the region of West, East, and Central Africa. And one of the questions we get a lot of the time is, what does it really mean to be digitally transformed as a business? What does it mean for me as an organization and for my customers and partners? So along the coming 45 minutes, I'm really looking forward to the conversation to try to lay some ground and foundation and some pillars of, from your experience, what's happening in other regions and what does it mean for a business in sub-Saharan Africa to be digitally transformed. So maybe let me start actually with Gerald, because I know KPMG just had a survey in our region around digital transformation and the role of IT. So maybe if you can share with us, just obviously at the beginning, if you can introduce yourself and then share with us what is the market telling us around the role of IT and digital disruption.
Okay, good morning, everybody. It's still morning. My name is Gerald Kasimu. I'm a partner in KPMG. I'm based here in Nairobi, and I look after the technology advisory practice for the East Africa region, having had the opportunity to work across the entire continent and spend quite a lot of time in the UK. with respect to your question on digital disruption and the survey that KPMG has undertaken in the recent times, about a year or so ago, we performed a survey across the globe where we spoke to about 4,000 business leaders. And the question that we raised in that survey was really to understand the state of IT and the impact that digital disruption essentially is having on businesses. And to a great extent, what we found amongst the great majority of the business leaders who participated in that survey, at least two-thirds of them expect and see that digital is disrupting their businesses in a great way. Another two-thirds of them, most of them are expecting that in the next year or two, their business is going to be disrupted by digital. And this is really the cloud, mobility, data, and the whole changes that are happening in our world that we were discussing this morning. What is surprising, though, is that despite these big numbers of people who are expecting their businesses to be disrupted, only about a quarter of them have got a digital strategy. In other words, they are thinking about what business are we in and how are we going to be able to take advantage of the changes in technology to be able to increase our top line and impact the world. So that's really the highlights of what we're seeing come through. So really the single biggest challenge that a lot of these businesses have is the lack of a clear strategy of how they're going to deploy digital technologies. And we can talk a little about that in the course of the conversation.
Absolutely. No, thank you for this. So let me pick on this one because I liked your statement around digital strategy and the role that this plays. And if I move to Tony, and from your experience in across industry at this point in time, how do you see these elements of digital transformation, but how do you see digital leadership and strategy in that sense?
Yeah, so as I talked before in my earlier session, you know, we see digital transformation in sort of a comprehensive way, multiple dimensions. And as I travel, you can see certain industries where the digital transformation story is particularly resonant. And you also see laggards in this space. You know, we've looked at industries like health, both private, if you will, and public sector health. Really a laggard in cloud computing, very concerned on privacy issues, and the EMR discussion has really been confounded. It's a very fragmented market with lots of providers. And I would say if you looked at the US market separate from rest of world, a bit of a fickle market, really difficult to sort of see the trends. It's really been a challenge as, now we see spots of amazing transformation project by project, and yet as an industry, the enablers of digital transformation, some of the big steps to sort of public cloud and big data are not fully realized in that industry because the enablers haven't been adopted far and wide. I look at FinServ or financial services, and we spend a lot of time with some of the largest financial institutions in the world, the too big to fail institutions. They too are aware, they're very aware that they're being disrupted. The digital strategies are still fairly weak relative to the disruption that they're looking to, that they've all acknowledged. And yet, interestingly enough, government and public sector is an interesting area where we see some of the most transformative actions are in public safety. It's one of our fastest growing industries where ministries of defense and national security, like the UK Ministry of Defense, are open to and looking at cloud and other capabilities. We see community policing, sheriff's offices in the Middle East, throughout Europe and Latin America that are really looking at whether it's mobile worn devices or different ways to engage in, if you will, public safety. This is where a lot of the work has been done. Education, we see, as we've talked about here, lots of around digital literacy, lots of openness, and even in higher ed, where because of the volumes of research data, really open to cloud and big data type computing because of the aspect. So look, I think from the perspective of there are regions around the world that are leaning in very, very significantly. I look at the health sector in Brazil and some of the work they're doing there in LATAM. I look obviously at taxation and some government processes in Mexico, in that area. We've looked throughout Africa at different examples we've talked about here. I think the biggest takeaway is that what constitutes digital transformation wherever a company or an organization is, you have to start somewhere. You have to have a strategy to start. I don't consider an organization fully digitally transformed until they've worked across multiple dimensions. If you digitally transform your service to your customer and your employees are working in antiquated, non-productive, non-efficient, to me that's not a full transformation. If you're working on legacy systems that haven't been modernized, that's not a full transformation. If you don't engage correctly with your, that's not a full transformation. I think ultimately that's what we'll call, you know, sort of success at the end of the day. But we need industries to get started. And I think the results that we heard from our colleague are absolutely what I see when I travel. Big concern, very low strategy, and even lower, quite frankly, implementation plans even for what has been designed.
And is there specific characteristics for a leader to take this kind of faith to go through? Because in some cases, I meet customers that their business are doing fine. Yeah. They know, to your point, they know that something is coming and they have to keep moving. Mm-hmm. But I guess in some cases, just the economies of scale or status quo, despite that we know we need to challenge this, but they still keep doing things as is. So do you see a role, specific role for the leadership in this case?
When I think of the leaders I've met that are ahead of their game on this, I think about the former postmistress in India, Dr. Banjali, who looked at the postal system in India to address 40% of the population that was in rural areas and said, look, there's 180,000 post offices, more than any country. We're going to use the postal system to do mobile banking. We're going to use the postal system to do literacy training. We're going to use the postal system to do blood screening. We're going to use that as an outpost. Absolutely ahead of her time and ahead of many in that area. When I think of Dr. Erkenkampf, who is head of UKB Hospital in Berlin, this is a gentleman who brings his entire medical team. I'm talking about head of cardiology, head of endocrinology, head of oncology, head of all forms of x-ray. He brings his entire team to the technical discussion. They're all becoming digitally literate, and his point is, I'm going to transform every aspect of hospitals throughout Germany. I mean, we have some leaders in this space. I think of the deputy mayor in Johannesburg and what she's doing with a township strategy that says we're going to collect on a platform, we're going to collaborate across townships to take best practices across townships, as you know, when we met with her. Look, there are wonderful examples, but I do think that this has not yet tipped the momentum where everyone is talking about it, every leader sees a view. I would argue we've got great case studies, but as long as I can name them, we're not there yet. Yeah. As a movement, we're not there.
No, fair. So let me move then. I think as a pivotal part of this is data. We all talk about big data and how this will open more new dimensions and probably touching or smoothing the paving the way for digital transformation. And I think we all heard the very interesting session from MCOPA and how data is helping with this transformation. So my question to you, Ranga, how do you see the role of data or how data will enable this movement towards digital transformation to be faster and easier?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned MCOPA, a very inspiring session just before this. What sticks in my mind is there's somebody who's using kerosene, who heard about MCOPA solar, and goes directly from bartering a goat to something powered by machine learning, cloud, IoT, solar in one shot. And this, to me, is the leapfrog opportunity that we have here in Africa. It is an original interpretation of digital transformation. So MCOPA can now look at the battery that's becoming weak in that customer for 40 shillings a day and be able to fix it before it becomes a trouble for that customer. And it's a lifeline of upgrading your world for that customer. They can get more services. This is a great illustration of digital transformation. This is at the human level. At every level in society, companies, governments, individuals, private companies, there's great opportunity to reimagine our world based on data. You sort of have new devices, new solutions to old problems that present themselves. And I'm so inspired by the work of people that I've met in Kenya over the last few days who take matters into their own hands to provide solutions that are blazing the trail for the world. Kenya is the leader in having most people use mobile money, very low credit card penetration. Maybe we entirely skip the credit card technologies and move over to the mobile money. And so we have fantastic opportunities. Digital transformation is in many ways an opportunity for a new birth directly into digital for Africa. And I'm so inspired and optimistic about it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's such an inspiring. I think in some of the discussions yesterday, we were talking how things are coming together to a very sweet spot between transformation on the continent and how the technology powered by cloud is enabling new perspectives. And I think big data play a pivotal role in this. So let me move then to Patrick. And from a banking standpoint, I think Standard Bank plays a big role across the region, and digital transformation is a big part for this play. So let me start. If I downloaded Standard Bank mobile app, does this mean that the bank has transformed, or there is more than this?
That's a good question.
Hello?
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, and you were talking about why some industries are having a hard time digitizing. Banking is one of those industries that is really struggling, because for hundreds of years we've done things a certain way, and all of a sudden we wake up and we're being attacked, you know, in all different aspects of our business. And it's not one player. I think the disruptors are all in different areas. So we have payment disruptors, lending disruptors, platform disruptors. So, and you have to remember that we've also set up a whole legacy of technology, which we've invested millions of dollars in over a long period of time, being a very highly regulated industry. So we sit in a very difficult position where you are definitely competing with a multiple set of players, all who are very nimble and agile, and who can move very quickly. And you're sitting in a buttress with a lot of invested investment in technology that's getting outdated very quickly. And then a very finicky customer who wants to switch from, you know, the experience on Facebook or WhatsApp or Apple Store and quickly get to the Stanbic Internet app, yeah, and have the same seamless experience. So it's a real challenge, and that's why we're moving rather slowly. I think on the customer experience, we're doing all we can to make sure that we stay abreast. So we'll launch an app, we'll launch an internet experience, but at the end of the day, the biggest issue for us is how to connect the back end. So when she was talking about the digitizing across, that's the biggest challenge. And for us, it's also the biggest opportunity. And I'll give you an example to illustrate. In Uganda, which is a very young nation, about half the country is probably in school-going age. So school fees is a big problem. And we have the largest branch network in Uganda. And we found that around school fees time, the branches were literally filled with people trying to pay school fees. And the issue was that we were charging about $1 to collect the school fees. But when we went back and did the analysis on how much it actually cost us to process that payment, so going through extending branch hours, reconciling the cash, moving the cash, making sure that the school fees went to the right school, etc., it actually cost us $3 to collect $1. So we were giving away $2 for that. And we were not going to really be able to increase the price of school fees collections to $3. So it was a huge conundrum. And what we ended up doing is migrating a majority of those school fees payments out of the branches into a mobile payment solution. Yep. So we went from losing $2 to making 10 cents. And so that, to me, is a digital story, and that's a powerful one. It's not about revenue or customer experience. Sometimes it can be about dislocating your own cost base, which has a huge impact, a much bigger impact than what incremental revenue you might make.
Yeah. Oh, this is actually a great commercial example of the impact. Yeah. So let me move to Jeremiah And you're leading a very interesting port in Microsoft. It's almost the largest online community, which is within the Windows Insider community. This is the largest community on Earth. That's, if I'm not too biased in this case. Is this fair to say?
It's certainly one of the largest.
Okay.
So to follow up on the point, I mean, it's imagining what happens to strategy when the power goes out. So we had this experience in Lagos, Nigeria. We were in Yaba, which is the tech center. And we're sitting around. I think some of you heard this story before. We're sitting around, and the lights go out. And all of us from Seattle, Washington, kind of stop, like, oh, no, there's no power. That means no wireless. That means no connectivity. I can't chat with folks, right? We were the only people that stopped. There's probably 30 people in the room. They're hacking together their solutions. They're using a local database. They're using local copies of their code. They don't stop, right? So one of the things that is interesting about digital transformation and that's impact on your strategy is that you as a player in the banking industry or a player in telecom or a player in one of these large, robust industries that's been around for a long time, is that entrepreneur who's hacking away in Java with no power and no wireless, he's coming for you, right? And so that's something that I learned as director of operations at a social enterprise in Cambodia. So Cambodia, as you know, is recovering from years of genocide and civil war. So a social enterprise there is doing, it's called digital divide data. And essentially they realized that you don't need a high school education. Most of the Khmer Rouge wiped out the teachers of Cambodia. You don't need a high school education to see a character and type it, even if that character is in English and you speak Khmer. And so they're helping folks as part of this social enterprise learn how to go into an office, learn how to come to work, learn the basic skills that you need to survive in this world. How to use email, how to make a PowerPoint, right? But they don't have a high school education. And they're interacting with clients, performing tasks for clients in the United States and in Europe. And that, in 2011, DDD, Digital Divide Data, came here to Kenya and was started by one of the luminaries of the Kenyan tech space. And it's impressive to see what even a small, passionate, devoted person can do in this new, very scary world, right? And that doesn't matter if you're Microsoft and you make $85 billion a year or if you're a lot smaller. Digital transformation affects all of us, whether you're rural or you're urban.
Fair. So let me, I know we need to open it up for some Q&A, but let me ask one question and try to get in 30 seconds the answer. If I'm right now sitting and I'm building the next MCOPA or the next startup that will really drive a solution for one of our problems in Africa, how should I think? What are the elements that you have seen important or the pillars that you have seen important in terms of this digital transformation? And not necessarily, by the way, just a startup. Think, if I am in your place, the head of Standard Bank in Uganda, what are these pillars that I need to be looking at? So maybe just go through a quick round of answer to this question.
I think you probably want to do two tests. One is what can you do that will actually improve the customer experience significantly. I think if you start there, because at the end of the day, we're doing this for the customer, because that's the one that actually keeps the lights on. So if it manages to go through that filter, then you also then look through what are you displacing? Because at the end of the day, for us to buy into that or to partner, because we are going to guard our customers. I mean, that's the only thing we have left. So if for us to give you access to our customer base, we probably want to get something out of it. So are you going to take some cost out of the system or simplify the system for us or, effectively make us a much more efficient animal? And I think if you can answer those two questions, then you have a win-win situation and then we move forward. That's the way I would think about it.
Fair.
Yeah, from my perspective, I think one of the key things that you need to get right if you want to create the next MCOPA, within your organization or as an entrepreneur, is create and allow a culture that encourages innovation. You've got to allow your people to be able to experiment. You've got to allow your people to be able to listen to consumers' needs and customers' needs, and you've got to give them the funding and the support to go out of the norm and try ways and means that have not necessarily been welcome previously in your organization. What we know today of IT organizations and businesses, you talked about the legacy. You talked about the way they take so long to develop new systems. You got to come up with new ways of agile development of new software and systems, and very quickly check whether they're working or not necessarily working. And if you need to make changes, you need to be able to make changes very quickly and deploy them into the consumer base, and then check what the feedback is coming through before you then continue to provide any other iterative upgrades of the functionality that you need to provide to those consumers. Yeah.
Culture of innovation. I think this is another panel discussion on its own, but let me move to Tony.
So I'm going to pull on that string. I may go in a slightly different direction, though. Let me just say, it's going to be controversial, but I think you have to take your eye off the ball. Okay. I learned how to play soccer from my dad and my brothers, who taught me how to learn the game by not watching the ball, by watching all the movement. And I learned how to play basketball by not watching the ball, but watching what was going on in the positioning. I actually think that innovation comes from other disciplines and opening the aperture on what you're trying to solve by looking in places that may be less common or traditional. I look at one of the solutions that we were able to implement, which came from the banking world, a credit worthiness algorithm that was used for social service to determine, if you will, child welfare eligibility. But it wasn't an algorithm from social service. It was an algorithm from banks that had to determine credit worthiness. Sometimes I think we get ourselves ready to structure innovation as if that's how the mind thinks. And we know from neuroscience that insights are most created. Most of your creativity is when your mind is at rest and when your mind is not focused on the area that you're trying to solve. And so I just would suggest, take your eye off the ball for a moment. Let's be open to innovation where it comes. And then from there, you've heard all the great advice here, but I really do believe some of the things that I do have to say. The gentleman from Uganda that I mentioned, that student, remember the young guy that I said who had no money and started Winsenga? I think he's here. If you're here, can you just stand if he's here? Good looking young man. Is he still here?
Yep.
Look, would you just give him a hand? This is the poor developer student. That was the solution I talked about in Uganda. I just want you to know, he looks like he's about 13. But anyway, he took his eye off the ball, I think. I think
Absolutely.
That's how that happened.
No, this is brilliant.
That is just brilliant, taking your eye off the ball. I think of the ball as the status quo, how the world has solved some problems so far. And the digital transformation gives us a unique opportunity to reimagine the right solution for our times and place. There are sort of two things I would ask everyone in the audience to sort of think about. First is the world is flatter than ever before. Yep. The coolest technologies, the hottest technologies, all the intermediate temperatures are all available to you personally here in Kenya through wonderful new devices and amazing power of the cloud. So you are as enabled with the current technologies as anybody else in the world. So that's raw material. Yep. You're blazing new ground because you're imagining a new way of doing the same things or maybe different things. And therefore, the second ask is keep your eye on the customer and not on the ball, which is the old solutions. Keep your eye on the customer, understand their needs, understanding the latest technologies, then try to solve their problems, you'll find yourself blazing new ground, like M-Copa and M-Pesa and other innovations that happen here. Very optimistic about the possibilities.
Yeah. Very good insight. Very good insight. So, Jeremiah.
So I'm going to follow that up by quoting Bambo Shofala. You have to listen, and you have to learn.
Yep.
So M-Copa is providing electricity and power to 450,000 people in East Africa, mostly in Kenya. They're providing employment to 2,500 people. They didn't start out by dreaming of the company with all the infrastructure with Azure on the back end that now exists. They realized that people wanted to see at night, that people wanted to charge their phones. And from that insight, by listening to the customer, like what makes the customer angry? Well, not being able to see at night, that kind of stinks. What worries the customer? Well, I don't know if I can pay my bills. I have to travel for 30 minutes to the bank to pay something. What concerns them? What is keeping the customer up at night? That's the problem. That's the thing that you need to keep, I think, at the center of what you're trying to do. What is the problem you're trying to solve? Then you build a solution. Here in East Africa, 75% of the population has access to mobile money through M-Pesa. That doesn't exist everywhere, but it exists here. So, okay, I want to sell essentially a small solar panel, and I want to sell a way to charge my radio or charge my phone. How can I collect payment when not everyone can go to a bank branch? When not everyone can access some of the ways that we, as Westerners, can pay with a credit card? Most people here don't have a credit card. So you can use M-Pesa as a way to pay for the solar panel, which is providing electricity, will let you see at night. Right? So you can actually build into your cost structure, build into your solution, the infrastructure that's around you in a way that's very authentic to the problem you're trying to solve. So to follow up on a couple of the great statements, first you listen and you learn and you keep that at the heart of what you're trying to do. And that's, I think, how you achieve the digital transformation, because you're solving a real problem.
You listen and you learn. Okay. So I think we heard some really good insights and key actions. Let me open it up for Q&A. I think we have almost around 15 minutes to have questions. So I wonder if, do we have a mic for the questions? Yep, okay.
Hello. Hi, my name is Warogoro. My question throughout the conference, but specifically for this panel, is what about the rest of Africa? A lot of the examples we've had are from South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya. Are we missing out something on Francophone Africa and just the rest of Africa? I don't know that there's a way to get there. I know internet penetration is very little, electricity penetration is very little, but could we possibly be missing out a lot? And in that same line of thinking, what are the possible solutions of using platforms, maybe even cloud platforms, to share solutions? Because maybe there are solutions out there, small, small solutions, and then using that to share them across Africa. Thanks.
So last year, there was $140 million in funding to about 140 startups. 95% of that funding went to those five countries you mentioned, right? The infrastructure is very concentrated. The funding is very concentrated. The momentum is very concentrated. How do you transform places that haven't yet have full bank branch penetration, where not everyone has a credit card, where not everyone has access to the electrical grid? I think that by starting in that place, so where are you from? From Kenya. So, I mean, it would be hard for me from, I was born in Massachusetts in the United States, it'd be hard for me to presume to know what will work in Senegal. I've been to Senegal. I spent about a month there. I speak French. That doesn't mean I understand what the challenges are of someone living in the Dakar. Right, and so I would start by figuring out who's living there, who's trying to solve the problem that is a real problem because it's something that she is confronting every day, and then I would seek to support her using technology, using some of the tools that we have. Right, you know, what is the talent that she needs to build her company? You know, how can we help her with her marketing plan? How can we help her do the financial modeling or connect to a back end or build a website or build an app? But I would start again by listening to someone who's actually there trying to solve the problem, because she knows what the problem is a lot better than I would presume to know.
Yeah. I would also highlight, just to add a perspective, and I know I'm the only person that shouldn't answer probably, but just out of passion for the region, especially in West Africa, actually I see the same pace of innovation happening. Just to give you an idea, I just came from Ivory Coast and Senegal. There is no Uber in Ivory Coast. There is TaxiJet, a small startup with 30,000 users, customers, right now in Abidjan in Ivory Coast. There is another application, actually, as progressive as some of the solutions that we've seen, for farmers to track their cattle and and help protect them from theft with 2,800 customers right now across Senegal and Ivory Coast. So I think innovation is happening, and we need to foster, to your point, innovation will always be, it's, we have some unique problems, or we have our own problems that I think we live on daily basis. And with the power of the cloud now, it gives us the ability to harness global capability across the world that can help us solve some of the local issues. What the last point I would say from your question as well, and it's something that's top of mind for us across Microsoft in the region, is clearly from your question, there is a bigger need on how we can share experience across the region. And how can we play a bigger role as a platform to share experience, whereby you in Kenya would know what's happening in Zambia, what innovation is being driven, and what can I take and localize for Kenya and vice versa. And I think this is a different conversation, but I think there is a bigger discussion that can happen there.
If I could add a little bit to what Amar's point was, it is very clear to me, through my life experiences, that any million people have the same aggregate potential as any other. You have the same set of brilliant people, capable people, itching to make a difference. And you see that everywhere. And I see the innovations that we see in these hotspots in Africa to spread to the other places in sort of at least two ways. I know the companies here, Mkopa, M-Pesa, all these guys are very interested, very ambitious about taking their technologies for all of Africa. So that's one vector. Let's, whatever works in any place in Africa, let's take it to a place where it's relevant and use it. So that's one. The second is, you know, it is very clear to me that the same flat world applies to all of Africa, and I expect to see innovations coming from across Africa, and it will happen. It is inevitable. African prosperity is inevitable. It's just some countries a little bit ahead of the others. And so I'm very optimistic about the possibilities.
And by the way, what you will see in the countries that seem to top the league in respect to innovation and all these digital solutions that we're seeing to problems that are not necessarily unique to Nigeria or Kenya or South Africa, those same problems exist elsewhere in these other countries. And at the back of it, as long as you've got good infrastructure, because you've got to be able to interconnect with the rest of the world. And if you look around, those countries are well interconnected with the rest of the world. Secondly, you need to have people that understand digital labor. People that have gone to school, they can utilize a computer, they can connect to the internet, and where there is high levels of literacy, to a large extent, that's where you see all these innovations happening, and then being replicated and transported to the lesser communities that do not have that levels of literacy.
I just would add the listening systems that we've talked about, that my colleague just, we need to be listening to what's happening outside of these big hotspots. We had a conversation yesterday with the Minister of Health in Zambia, and it was the first time I heard of an integrated approach, which is absolutely digitally transforming, around social determinants. And this is Zambia's ability to bring not only the health ministry, but the manufacturing, the creation of tobacco, and the effect of tobacco on Zambians being analyzed in the same model. Clean water and those industries that drive clean water or those who pollute coming together all on the same table in an integrated social determinant model that will start to change the way they look at health going forward and hold different industries within the country accountable for the 15 million citizens. And if you're getting a profit from that industry, you better be ready to reinvest that in the health condition you created. It's one of the first integrated models I've seen around the world. Here's a small country with an interesting innovation. So I think this listening system is important. And I want to take you up on your statement that I think even our For Africa team, this idea of we're a platform company. And if any company can share, can help collaborate, the collaboration and convening of the right stories and the right messaging to the world outside of this region, I think Microsoft can do more. So I want to take you up on that. The For Africa team is here, so you just heard a new task
I apologize, but we're going to do it real time. Because I think that's it's a push, and we should get that push. You know, we're working. We're not working just in these countries. We're working across. We just came from Cote d'Ivoire. We're working across.
Yep.
So I think it's a push to us. But I would also ask you all to make sure you've got learning listening systems in place to listen from your neighbors. And let's not get into pride of authorship. This is the best time to plagiarize. If it's a good idea, plagiarize. Go deeply after plagiarism.
You heard it here first. Permission.
Permission to plagiarize. We may have coined a new approach.
Please, go ahead.
Hello. So one thing I've noticed now that we've addressed the issue of geography is that even within geographies, there tends to be a focus on what I call base of the pyramid solutions when it comes to technology in Africa. So all we'll, you know, we'll usually hear about, I've been to several of these forums, M-Pesa, M-Copa, Equity Bank with low-cost banking. Those are good things. I'm not saying they're bad things. But there is a middle and a top sector to the African economies as well that also needs technological intervention. If I give you an example of share trading at the Nairobi Stock Exchange taking 2 or 3 days to move to transfer share ownership, and you compare it with millisecond trading in New York, you see we've got a long way to go.
Yep.
And things like that, liquidity of capital markets, they're important issues. And they are bottlenecks, you know. I know SMEs in the United States can list on the NASDAQ very efficiently, raise capital. And in most economies, SMEs account for a lot of employment. So I just worry sometimes that there's too much focus on the base of the pyramid, almost like it's not fashionable to focus on the middle and the top. Yet those are very important sectors for deep economic development, even though they, you know, they don't have the traditional woman with a feature phone selling vegetables at the side of the road.
So that's a great point. But I would argue that some of the ways that you solve those problems of the lag, of the latency, you solve in the same way, right? So, you know, why is there a lag in the stock exchange, right? Where's the data center? Is it here, or is it in Ireland, or is it in South Africa? Like, where is it receiving signals? An undersea cable from the UK? You know, what is the government regulation around going bankrupt or hiring or firing, right? So a lot of the ways in which you tackle the problem are first pay attention to the local situation, right? What are the specific things that are causing the problem that you're describing? And then you try to resolve them. Maybe it's policy making with the government. Maybe it's showing people, you know, how do you use Azure? How do you build faster code, right? So figure out where the bottlenecks are, and then target those in a way that can work.
Sorry, I'd just like to clarify. I think where my question was headed was the orientation of funding in Africa towards base of the pyramid solutions, as if the middle and high-end solutions don't matter as much. And they do really matter. I would just like to say we're an M4A-funded company. So, and out of all the different pitching we did, since ours wasn't a base of the pyramid solution, we finally found somebody who understood, look, it's not base of the pyramid, but it is important to address. And I'm just thinking that there needs to be a lot more of that so that there isn't this whole charity orientation towards funding of technology in Africa.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair point, especially in the middle part, because there are lots of players focusing on the top part of the pyramid, and we can talk about transformation there, but I think they have the financial means to do this. I think the middle part is where it becomes challenging. Because the one thing I would say, the bottom part, it's not only charity. I think we have a unique opportunity in Africa. And now I'm talking out of, also I want to frame the opportunity right, which is at the bottom part, you have the volume. So while you don't have the income, the disposable income that's high, but you have the volume. And this is what makes it unique. I think the middle part is where it gets a bit challenging, and we need to find ways together, because the answer, I don't think there is a silver bullet, but we need to find ways to find how to make this part of the market has its own attractiveness, whether to investors or to the go-to-market itself, to customers.
For the top of the pyramid, there's a dilemma. The dilemma is, if you're behind on the old way of doing things, do you quickly catch up on the old way to the best of the old way, or do you dump it and reimagine? FinTech, as you alluded to, is an area where the rules are dramatically changing in the world. And I think the same lessons are true for the top of the pyramid as well. You know, so you don't have to follow the same path. As Amr mentioned, I also believe that in that world, you do have the means. You just need the ability to think differently, yeah, as differently as we think about for the bottom of the pyramid. And so necessarily we are inspired by stories from the bottom of the pyramid, but the lessons are equally valid. If anything, it's probably a little bit harder because they're used to a certain old way of working. So very fair point, very fair point.
One just last comment. So McKinsey defines the consuming class, the middle class, as people making between $10 and $20 a day, right? There are about 385 million people last year who entered that consuming class. 6% were in Africa, and most of them were in Nigeria, right? So it's investment in the bottom of the pyramid isn't charity. In some cases, if you can achieve a low cost base, that's actually a smart business opportunity because of the volume, right? But you need to be nimble enough to be able to provide that value at a very low cost, so you can actually be profitable at volume. So it's not, I would argue that it's not at all a charity thing. That investment focus on the bottom is, my colleague mentioned, that's money, that's profit, right?
Yep.
Thank you. Michael from Uganda. Two things about digital transformation, and then I would like to hear from you. How do we move from digital literacy to digital competence? Because there is a lot of investment in digital literacy and just getting guys to use devices. A couple of people can send SMSs and check emails. But how do we go to a level of competence? Two is, I was trying to convince my dad to buy a laptop, and I thought his business as a farmer was becoming big. He told me, if you can find me software that can tell me about my cows, my tea, he's a multi-level farmer. He says, get me that laptop. And I tried to look on the market. You couldn't easily find a mini ERP system, if I could put it that way, that helps him to see, visualize how much time he's spending in the tea. How much money is he spending vis-a-vis? Because all the money comes and goes into one pot. And that, when I did check, I realized that there's a lot of investment in helping farmers find about pricing, find out. And this farmer has 10 kilograms of corn. And I mean, lots of companies have invested in that, find your price, do this and that. But if you have 10 kilograms of corn, who is going to pay attention to you? So I think as innovators, we also need, because there's money in the base of the pyramid, there's a lot of funding that is coming for the base of the pyramid, I think we may have to look a notch higher. And my last comment is around the whole strategy, the gatekeepers. The conversations we tend to have in these places are amongst ourselves, the techie guys. How do we bring in other people, the gatekeepers? In health, back home in Uganda, you go to talk to a health official, and he's looking at you, and you can clearly see he's saying, when is this meeting coming to an end, and I do something else? I am an innovator. I know Joshua, we've been working on this and talking around Winsenga, and the biggest challenge we've had, there is every dot to tick, there is every policy to care of, and guys are frustrated. Innovators are struggling. Why the gatekeeper doesn't quickly see, where is my check? Thank you.
Thank you.
I have opinions on gatekeepers. Shall we start?
Yep, please.
So the good news is the gatekeepers anywhere in the world sort of holding people back, sort of people who have the power, not thinking differently, not listening to real people, often become barriers to progress. While we can hope that all of them will reform, I don't think it's very optimistic to wait for that to happen. So I think the approach is there are some of those gatekeepers that are enlightened leaders across the continent who are using their power to make a dramatic difference. When that happens, if you're one of those lucky people where the gatekeepers are the liberated ones, that's all power to you. Those fantastic things happen. Otherwise, we have to look for market mechanisms that go around. And fortunately, in the emerging world, those are aplenty. There's lots of inspiration to be had across the continent on how to go around the gatekeepers. The one thing I would ask you is don't complain about gatekeepers. Don't try to reform them. If they have half a sense about them, they would reform in a hurry because the world is changing and they are either with it and contributing to the new world or they get run over.
Yep.
Another example, this one in transportation from the United States. My friend Tyler is from Portland, Oregon. And getting around here, we've been taking a lot of Ubers, right? Who here has taken an Uber? Anyone? So in Portland, Oregon, there was a very well-entrenched taxi industry that didn't want Uber to come in and take all their customers. And as it turns out, when you've been in Portland, Oregon, doing business for hundreds of years, you end up being very close with the legislative officials who are in charge of the Taxi and Limousine Commission for Portland, Oregon. So how did Uber go about that? How did Uber enter that market? Did they go directly for the gatekeepers and say, you know, you need to change the law and we're going to wait, you know, we're going to lobby you and wait 20 years to do that? No. What did they do? They went to the consumers. They went to the consumers and said, look, up in Seattle, you can use an Uber to get around. It's a lot cheaper than taxi. It's a lot more convenient. You can have it come to right wherever you are. You don't have to wait and hope that he comes and gets you. They went directly to the consumers and said, hey, this is the phone number. This is the email address. This is, you know, the office of where the people making the decision are. If you have an opinion on this, go let them know. So that's very specific to Portland, Oregon. But in general, that's one way you get around gatekeepers is you provide value to people who are willing to go to bat for you. So you're not doing this battle by yourself. Your consumers are doing battle on behalf of the problem that you're solving for them. So that's one way to go around gatekeeping.
Okay. So we'll have to stop here, actually, because we are right now between you and lunch, as per my understanding. But as you can see, it's a very rich conversation that cuts across industries. And I think we need to keep with the spirit that we've been having across the day. We need to keep this conversation going. Please make sure that you have side discussions with all of us and deeper conversations as well across our region. How can we make digital transformation a reality? I would leave you with the 5 points that our panel just shared with us that I think it's very insightful. One was keep your eyes on the customer and the customer experience. 2 was the culture of innovation. 3, taking your eyes off the ball to make sure that you can really innovate other than the legacy of how things were done. And 4 was around the world is being flatter and how can you take best practices elsewhere and replicate them. And last one, listen and learn. It's been a real pleasure being part of this distinguished panelist. Thank you very much and thank you. Thank you for the question. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Amir. Thank you, panelists. Please give them another round of applause. Great. So, yeah, it's between, now lunch is between, am I between you and your lunch or the other way around? Okay, so a few announcements. You need to pick your voucher, your lunch voucher. So These will be given out by the assistants as you walk out. And you can have lunch in any of the three restaurants. That's the Ladder restaurant, Al Fresco, and the Terrace. The Terrace is on the first floor. You can have lunch in any of those. The Women and Tech Luncheon. This is a special one. I think this is by invitation. Women in Tech Luncheon. This will be in Mount Kenya 213. So those who registered for the Women in Tech Luncheon, please make your way there. Now it's about 12:30, so 12 something. So I want us to be here by 1:30. Let's spend about 1 hour, then so that we can catch up on time. We're running a bit late, and we still have a lot of content to cover. So please be here in just an hour. Thank you very much.